Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased that I get the opportunity to discuss here today my concept of non-local consciousness based on scientific research on near-death experience in survivors of cardiac arrest. A near-death experience, or NDE, or an experience of enhanced consciousness during a period of apparent coma, still give rise to many unbelieving and critical questions, especially by physicians and neuroscientists. But as already one century ago, William James has said, to study the abnormal is the best way of understanding the normal. How can it scientifically be explained that people can have clear memories from a period of obvious unconsciousness? Or how is it possible that permanent life changes occur after cardiac arrest of only 2 minutes? An NDE is the unforgettable confrontation with the unlimited dimensions in our consciousness. As long as one not had experienced an NDE himself, it seems impossible to really understand the impact and the life-changing after-effects of this overwhelming experience. The existing worldview has radically changed. Quote, "It felt as if I had become another person with the same identity." Or another quote, "You can be physically dead, but your mind lives on. Only one thing matters, your attitude towards other people. I accept life as it is, and I am no longer afraid of death." I will not only talk about changes in consciousness during and after an NDE, but above all, I want to discuss my ideas about the relationship between consciousness and the brain and the body. Important questions for me were, how is consciousness related to the integrity of brain function? Is it possible to gain insight in this relationship? Is there a biological basis for consciousness anyway? We can distinguish between both temporary and timeless aspects in our consciousness. This prompts the following question. Is it possible to speak of a beginning of our consciousness, and will our consciousness ever end? I realize that my approach will be new or unexpected for most neuroscientists, and that my conclusions will not always be in conformity with the currently widely accepted materialistic paradigm in Western science. In my recently released book, Consciousness Beyond Life, or in German, Endloses Bewusstsein, Neue Medizinische Nahtoderfahrung, I write in many more details about my ideas about non-local consciousness that I can explain here today in my lecture. But I also realize that many aspects of consciousness are still a great mystery. How started my interest in NDE? In 1969, during my rotating internship, a patient was successfully resuscitated in the coronary care unit by electrical defibrillation. In those days, this was all new and exciting for us. We mostly do not realize anymore that until 1967, only 45 years ago, all patients with cardiac arrest died because modern resuscitation techniques like defibrillation and external chest compressions were not yet available, only 45 years ago. But this patient regained consciousness after a period of unconsciousness of about 4 minutes. And we, a resuscitation team, were of course very happy. But the patient seemed to be very, very disappointed. He told me about going through a tunnel, seeing a light, and also beautiful colors and hearing music. I have never forgotten this event, but I did not do anything with it. And in that time, I did not know that in human history, the same experience have been told in many cultures and many religions and in all times, as shown in this painting from 1480 by the Dutch painter Hieronymus Bosch, showing deceased people escorted through a tunnel to the light. Only years later, in 1975, Raymond Moody first described these so-called near-death experiences. And only in 1986, I read about these experiences in the book by George Ritchie entitled Return from Tomorrow, which relates what he experienced during a period of clinical death of 9 minutes duration during his medical study. And after reading this book, I started to interview my patients who had survived a cardiac arrest. And to my great surprise, within 2 years, 12 patients out of 50 survivors of cardiac arrest in the past told me about their NDE. For me, it all started with scientific curiosity, because according to our current medical concepts, it is not possible to experience consciousness during a cardiac arrest when circulation and breathing have ceased. I grew up in an academic environment in which I had been taught that there is a reductionist and materialistic explanation for everything, and that it was obvious that consciousness was the product of a functioning brain. And up until that point, I had always accepted this as indisputable truth. But now the phenomenon of near-death experience raised a number of fundamental questions. An NDE is a special state of consciousness that occurs during an imminent or actual period of physical, psychological, or emotional death. But how and why does an NDE occur? How does the content of an NDE come about? Why does a person's life change so radically after an NDE? I was unable to accept most of the answers to these questions because they seemed incomplete, incorrect, or unfounded. But first, what is an NDE, a near-death experience? Some people who have survived a life-threatening crisis report an extraordinary conscious experience. An NDE can be defined as the reported memory of a range of impressions during a special state of consciousness, including a number of universal elements, such as an out-of-body experience, pleasant feelings, seeing a tunnel, a light, deceased relatives, a life review, or the conscious return into the body. And many circumstances have been described during which NDE are reported, such as cardiac arrest, clinical death, shock after loss of blood, childbirth, coma following traumatic brain injury, a stroke, near drowning, children, or asphyxia, but also in serious diseases not immediately life-threatening during depression, isolation, or meditation, or without any obvious reason. Similar experiences to near-death ones can occur during the terminal phase of illness and are called deathbed visions or end-of-life experiences. So apparently, you don't always need a non-functioning brain to report an NDE. The NDE is transformational, always causing enhanced intuitive sensitivity, profound changes in life insight, and the loss of the fear of death. And near-death experiences occur with increasing frequency because improved survival rates resulting from modern techniques of resuscitation. The content of an NDE and the effects on patients seem similar worldwide across all cultures and all times. However, the subjective nature and the absence of a frame of reference for this experience lead to individual, cultural and religious factors determining the vocabulary used to describe and interpret the experience. Children and adults, Christians and atheists, Muslims and Buddhists, they all use different words from their own religion, culture and tradition. And according to a recent at random poll in Germany and the USA, about 4% of the total population in the Western world should have experienced a near-death experience. So more than 9 million people in the USA, 3 million people in Germany, and about 20 million people in Europe must have had an NDE. Now, why do we physicians hardly ever hear a patient tell about their NDE? patients are so reluctant to share their experience with others by all the negative responses they get. You have to be open to hear about an NDE. Patients must feel that you trust them, that you can listen without any comment or prejudice. But for most physicians, the NDE is still an incomprehensible and unknown phenomenon. Once a conference was held about NDE in a university hospital with more than 300 people in attendance. And at the end of the conference, after several lectures about NDE, a man stood up and said, "I'm a cardiologist for more than 25 years. I have never heard such absurd stories. This is total nonsense. I don't believe one word of it." And then another man got up in the audience and said, "I am one of your patients. I had an NDE during cardiac arrest, and you would be the last one I would ever tell." They know and feel exactly. They know and feel exactly that these kind of physicians are not open and able to hear. Until recently, there was no prospective and scientifically designed study to explain the cause and content of an NDE. All studies had been retrospective and very selective with respect to patients. And based on these incomplete retrospective studies, some believed that the experience could be caused by physiological changes in the brain as a result of lack of oxygen, cerebral anoxia. Other theories encompass a high psychological reaction to approaching death, hallucinations, dreams, side effects of drugs, or just false memories. So in 1988, we started a prospective study in 344 consecutive survivors of cardiac arrest in 10 Dutch hospitals with the aim to investigate the frequency, the cause and content of an NDE. And this cartoon was published in a Dutch national newspaper when our study was published in The Lancet in December 2001. We wanted to know if there could be a physiological, pharmacological, psychological, or demographic explanation why people experience enhanced consciousness during a period of cardiac arrest. And we did a short standardized interview with sufficiently recovered patients within a few days of resuscitation and asked whether they could remember the period of unconsciousness and what they recalled. And we additionally performed a longitudinal study with taped interviews of all late survivors of with NDE 2 and 8 years following the cardiac arrest, along with a matched control group of survivors of cardiac arrest who did not report an NDE. We studied patients who survived cardiac arrest because this is a well-described, life-threatening medical situation, which is also called clinical death. The definition of clinical death was used for the period of unconsciousness caused by lack of oxygen or anoxia of the brain, due to the arrest of circulation and breathing that happens during cardiac arrest in patients with an acute myocardial infarction. And these patients will ultimately die from irreversible damage to the brain if cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR, is not initiated within 5 to 10 minutes. It is the closest model to the process of dying. And in cases where memories were reported, we coded the experience according to a weighted core experience index. In this system, the depth of the NDE was measured according to the reported elements of the content of the NDE. And the more elements were reported, the deeper the experience was and the higher the resultant score was. We found that 282 patients, 82%, had no recollection of the period of cardiac arrest, of the period of unconsciousness. But 62 patients, 18%, reported some recollection of the time of clinical death. And of these patients, 41, 12% had a core experience with a score of 6 or higher, and 21, 6% had only a superficial NDE. Now, which elements were reported? In our study, about 50% of the patients with an NDE reported awareness of being dead or had positive emotions. About 25% of the patients had an out-of-body experience. 30% reported moving through a tunnel, about 25% had communication with the light of observed colors, about 30% of the patients had an observation of a celestial landscape or had a meeting with deceased relatives, 13% experienced a life review, and 8% experienced a border. So in our study, all well-known elements were reported except a frightening NDE, but I know personally patients who had a frightening NDE. Now, the question was, what might distinguish the small percentage of patients who report an NDE from those who do not? We found to our surprise that neither the duration of cardiac arrest, 2 minutes or 8 minutes, nor the duration of unconsciousness, 5 minutes or 3 weeks in coma, nor the need for intubation and complicated CPR, nor induced cardiac arrest in electrophysiological stimulation, EPS, had any influence whatsoever in the frequency of NDE. NS is not significant. Neither could we find any relationship between the frequency of NDE and administered drug, fear of death before the arrest, nor foreknowledge of NDE, gender, religion, or education. And we additionally performed a longitudinal study with taped interviews of all late survivors with NDE 2 and 8 years following the cardiac arrest, along with a matched control group of survivors of cardiac arrest who did not report an NDE. And this study was designed to assess whether the loss of the fear of death, the transformation in attitude toward life, and the enhanced intuitive sensitivity is the result of having an NDE or just the result of cardiac arrest itself. This had never been studied before in a prospective design. The NDE turned out to be a life-changing experience because only patients with an NDE did show this aforementioned typical transformation. The conversations we had in our longitudinal study also revealed that people, often to their own amazement and confusion, had acquired enhanced intuitive feelings after an NDE, or, as many of them put them, they had acquired paranormal gifts. This enhanced intuition is based on interconnectedness with the non-local consciousness of others and is independent of time, inner knowing of future events, of having prognostic dreams, and is independent of distance. The sense of knowing about an incoming phone call and of pain, illness, of upcoming death of people was usually proved to be accurate. This sudden occurrence of this enhanced intuition can be quite problematic, as people suddenly have a very acute sense of others, which can be extremely intimidating. As someone told me, I couldn't even talk about it, or I would have been committed to an institution. Finally, it is quite remarkable and a surprising and unexpected finding to see a cardiac arrest lasting only a few minutes give rise to such a lifelong process of transformation. However, the integration and acceptance of an NDE is a process that may take many years because of its far-reaching impact on people's pre-NDE understanding of life and value system. Despite the mostly positive experience, the NDE is also a traumatic event because there's hardly any acceptance by doctors, nurses, family members, and partner, with more than a 50% divorce rate. They're not the same person as they were married before, which makes the process of acceptance and integration very difficult. And this process will take many, many years with strong feelings of depression, homesickness, and loneliness. But the longer the interval between NDE and an interview, the more positive changes are usually reported. Several theories have been proposed to explain an NDE. However, in our first prospective study ever, it could not be shown that psychological, pharmacological, or physiological factors caused this experience during cardiac arrest. With a purely physiological explanation, such as lack of oxygen in the brain, most patients who had been clinical dead should report an NDE. because all patients in our study had been unconscious because of lack of oxygen in the brain resulting from the cardiac arrest. However, only 18% reported an NDE. And why only 18% report an NDE after cardiac arrest is still a huge mystery. Besides, it is a well-established fact that people without any lack of oxygen in the brain, like in depression or meditation, can also experience an enhanced consciousness. Another theory holds that the NDE might be an unchanging state of consciousness, or the theory of continuity, in which memories, identity, and cognition with emotion function independently from the unconscious body, or retain the possibility of extrasensory perception. Obviously, during NDE, enhanced consciousness is experienced independently from the normal body-linked waking consciousness. If four prospective studies with identical study design, our Dutch study, the only study with statistical analysis, one study from the USA and two studies from the UK, about the same percentage of NDE was found in a total of 562 patients who survived cardiac arrest. And Bruce Grayson from the American study writes in his comment that no one physiological or psychological model by itself could explain all the common features of an NDE. The paradoxical occurrence of heightened lucid awareness and logical thought processes during a period of impaired cerebral perfusion raises particular perplexing questions for our current understanding of consciousness and its relation to brain function. A clear sensorium and complex perceptual process during a period of apparent clinical death challenge the concept that consciousness is localized exclusively in the brain. And Sampani and Peter Fennick from the British study write that the data from several NDE studies suggest that the NDE arises during unconsciousness. And this is a surprising conclusion, because when the brain is so dysfunctional that the patient is deeply comatose, those cerebral structures which underpin subjective experience and memory must be severely impaired. Complex experiences such as reported in the NDE should not arise or be retained in memory. Such patients would be expected to have no subjective experience at all. Penny Sartori from the other British study concludes that according to mainstream science, it is quite impossible to find a scientific explanation for the NDE as long as we believe that consciousness is only a side effect of a functioning brain. The fact that people report lucid experience in their consciousness when brain activity has ceased is, in her view, difficult to reconcile with current medical opinion. With lack of evidence for any other theories for NDE, the concept, this far assumed but never scientifically proven, that consciousness and memories are produced where large groups of neurons and are localized in the brain, should be discussed, as Rupert told us this morning as well. How could a clear consciousness outside one's body be experienced at the moment that the brain no longer functions during a period of clinical death, even with a flatline EEG? And furthermore, even blind people have described critical perceptions during an out-of-body experience at the time of the NDE. Scientific study of NDE pushes us to the limits of our medical and neurophysiological ideas about the range of human consciousness and the mind-brain relation. Before I discuss in greater detail some neurophysiological aspects of the normal brain function and during cardiac arrest, I would like to reconsider certain elements of the NDE. A first out-of-body experience. In this experience, people have theoretical perceptions from a position outside and above their lifeless body. NDEs have the feeling that they have left, apparently taken off the body as an old, like an old coat. And to their surprise, they appear to have retained their own identity with the possibility of perception, emotions, and a very clear consciousness. This out-of-body experience is scientifically important because doctors, nurses, and relatives can verify the reported perceptions. And they can also corroborate the precise moment the NDE with OBE occurred during the period of CPR. In a recent review of 93 corroborated reports of potentially verifiable out-of-body perceptions during NDE, Jen Holden has found that about 90% of these were completely accurate. 8% contained only some minor error, and only 2% was completely erroneous. This proves that an OBE cannot be an hallucination, because this means experience and perception that has no basis in reality, like in psychosis. Neither it can be a delusion, which is an incorrect assessment of a correct perception, nor is it an illusion, which means a misapprehensive or misleading image. Additionally, OBEs with veridical perception from a position out and above the body have never been induced, despite mentioning this in medical literature, because only bodily illusions were induced by inhibition of special areas of the cortex. A real OBE is clearly shown in this drawing from a six-year-old girl who nearly drowned and was resuscitated in an American hospital. In this drawing, you see a happy and smiling girl watching from above her resuscitation with many correct details, like the two nurses who are doing external heart massage. And these children don't know, of course, how resuscitation happens when you're a six-year-old. And this is a report of a nurse of a coronary care unit. During night shift, an ambulance brings in a 43-year-old cyanotic comatose man into the coronary care unit. He was found in coma about 30 minutes before in a meadow. When we go to intubate the patient, he turns out to have dentures in his mouth. I remove these upper dentures and put them onto the crash cart. And only after about 1 hour and a half, the patient has sufficient heart rhythm and blood pressure, but he is still ventilated and intubated and he's still comatose. He is transferred to the intensive care unit to continue the necessary artificial respiration for 1 week, because it was another 1 week in coma. And after more than 1 week in coma, do I meet again with the patient who is by now just back on the cardiac ward. The moment he sees me, he said, "Oh yes, you know where my dentures are." I am very, very surprised. And then the patient elucidates, "Yes, you were there when I was brought into hospital. And you took my dentures out of my mouth and put them onto that cart that has all these bottles on it. And there was this sliding drawer underneath, and there you put my teeth." I was especially amazed because I remembered this happening while the man was in deep coma and in the process of CPR. It appeared that the man had seen himself lying in bed, that he had perceived from above how nurses and doctors had been busy with the CPR. He was also able to describe correctly and in detail the small room in which he had been resuscitated, as well as the appearances of those present, like myself. Then the holographic life review. During this life review, the subject feels the presence and renewed experience of not only every act, but also of every thought from one's past life. And one realizes that all of it is an energy field which influences oneself as well as others. All that had been done and thought seems to be significant and stored, because one is connected with the memories, emotions, and consciousness of another person. You experience the consequences of your own thoughts, words, and actions to that other person at the very moment in the past that they occurred. Interconnectedness. Patients survey their whole life in one glance. Time and space do not seem to exist during such an experience. Non-locality. Quotation. all of my life up till the present seems to be placed before me in a kind of panoramic, three-dimensional review. And each event seemed to be accompanied by consciousness of good or evil, or with the insight into cause and effect. Not only did I perceive everything from my own position, own viewpoint, but I also knew the thoughts of everyone involved in the event, as if I had their thoughts within me. This meant that I perceived not only what I had done or thought, but even in what way it had influenced others, as if I saw things with all-seeing eyes. And so even your thoughts are apparently not wiped out. Consider the impact of this statement for a moment. Your thoughts are apparently never wiped out. And all the time during the review, the importance of love was emphasized. Looking back, I cannot say how long this life review and life insight lasted. It may have been long, for every subject came up, but at the same time it seemed just a fraction of a second, because I perceived it all at the same moment. Time and distance seems not to exist. I was in all places at the same time, and sometimes my attention was drawn to something and then I would be present there. And also a preview or a flash forward can be experienced, in which both future images from personal life events as well as more general images from the future occur. People feel like they can see a part of the life that is yet to come. And again, it seems as if time and space do not exist during this preview, non-locality. The reports of the verifiable future events inevitably raises questions about free will and about the extent to which people can determine their own future. Quote, "And in a flash I saw the rest of my life. I could see a large part of my future life, taking care of my children, my wife's illness, everything that would happen to me both in and out of the workplace. I could see it all. I foresaw my wife's death and my mother's passing. One day I wrote down all the things I saw back then, and over the years I have been able to tick them off, or they're all off. For instance, I saw my wife on her deathbed wrapped in a white shawl, just like the one she was given by a friend of hers shortly before she died." And if deceased acquaintances or relatives are encountered in the otherworldly dimension, they are usually recognized by their appearance, and communication is possible through thought transfer. Thus, it is possible to come into contact with the consciousness of deceased persons, interconnectedness. Quote, "During my cardiac arrest, I had an extensive experience, and later I saw, apart from my deceased grandmother, a man who looked at me lovingly, but whom I did not know. More than 10 years later, at my mother's deathbed, she confessed to me that I had been born out of an extramarital relationship, my father being a Jewish man who had been deported and killed during the Second World War. And my mother showed me his picture. The unknown man that I had seen more than 10 years before during my NDE turned out to be my biological father." Some patients can describe how they returned into the body, mostly through the top of the head, after they had come to understand that it wasn't their time yet, or that they still had a task to fulfill. The conscious return into the body is experienced as something very oppressive. They regain consciousness in their body and realize that they are locked up in the damaged body again, meaning again all the pain and restrictions of their disease. Quote, "When I came to in my body, it was dreadful, so dreadful. The experience had been so beautiful that I didn't want to come back. I had wanted to stay there, and yet I had come back. And from that moment, it was a real struggle to live my life inside my body with all the limitations I experienced at the time. But later I realized that this experience was in fact a blessing. For now I know that the mind and body are separate and that there's life after death. All people who experience an NDE lose their fear of death. Quote, "It is outside my domain to discuss something that can only be proven by death. For me, however, this blessing experience was decisive in convincing me that consciousness lives on beyond the grave, and that I know now for sure that body and mind are separated. Death was not death, but another form of life." So we have to come to the surprising conclusion that in our study during cardiac arrest, all these reported elements of an NDE were experienced during the transient functional loss of all functions of the cortex and the brainstem with a flatline EEG. But how do we know that the EEG, the registration of the electrical activity of the cortex, is flat in those patients with cardiac arrest? And how can we study this? Through many studies with induced cardiac arrest in humans, both humans and also in animal models, cerebral function has been shown to be severely compromised during cardiac arrest, with complete cessation of cerebral flow, causing the clinical findings of the sudden loss of consciousness, the loss of breathing, apneu, the loss of all body reflexes, a function of the cortex, but also the loss of all brainstem reflexes, like the gag reflex, the corneal reflex, and fixed and dilated pupils. The electrical activity in the cerebral cortex, but also in the deeper structures of the brain and animal studies, has been shown to be absent after 10 to 20 seconds, a flatline EEG. And in an acute myocardial infarction, the duration of cardiac arrest in the coronary carrier route is always longer than 20 seconds, usually at least 60 to 120 seconds, and in a hospital ward or in an out-of-hospital arrest, it even takes much longer. So all 562 survivors of cardiac arrest in the four prospective studies must have had a flatline EEG. Now, this conclusion is often called impossible and unscientific. The quite often proposed objection that a flatline EEG does not rule out any brain activity because it is mainly a registration of the electrical activity of the cortex misses the mark. The issue is not whether there is any brain activity or any kind of any kind whatsoever, but whether there is the measurable brain activity of the specific form regarded by contemporary neuroscience as the necessary condition for conscious experience, with visible activities in many neural centers, the so-called global neural workspace. And it has been proven that there is no such specific brain activity at all during cardiac arrest. So it is indeed a scientific challenge to discuss new hypotheses that could explain the possibility to have clear and enhanced consciousness during a transient period of a non-functional brain, with memories, self-identity, with cognition, with emotion, with the possibility of perception out and above the lifeless body. To explain the reported interconnectedness with the consciousness of other persons and of diseased relatives. To explain the possibility of to experience instantaneously and simultaneously non-locality, a review and a preview of someone's life in a dimension without our conventional body-linked concept of time and space, where all past, present, and future events exist, and even to explain the experience of the conscious return into the body. So it is indeed a scientific challenge to discuss new hypotheses. In my recent book, Consciousness Beyond Life, or in German, Endloses Bewusstsein, which was a bestseller in the Netherlands with more than 100,000 copies sold within 1 year, I describe a concept in which our endless consciousness with declarative function, memories, finds its origin in and is stored in a non-local space as wave functions of information. and the brain only serves as a relay station for parts of these wave fields of consciousness to be received into or as our waking consciousness. The function of the brain should so be compared with a transceiver, a transmitter-receiver or interface, exactly like the function of a computer. Different neuronal networks function as interface for different aspects of our consciousness. And the function of neuronal networks should be regarded as receivers and conveyors, and not as retainers of consciousness and memories. In this concept, non-local consciousness is not rooted in the measurable domain of physics, our manifest world. However, the physical aspects of consciousness which originates from the wave aspects of our consciousness through collapse of the wave function, objective reduction, can be measured by means of neuroimaging techniques like EEG, fMRI, and PET scan. In this concept of non-local consciousness, all reported elements of NDE during cardiac arrest could be explained. In trying to understand this concept of interaction between non-local consciousness and the material body, it seems appropriate to compare it with modern worldwide communication. There is a continuous exchange of objective information by means of electromagnetic fields for radio, television, mobile telephone, or laptop computer. At this very moment, we are invaded by hundreds of thousands of telephone calls and hundreds of TV and radio programs. But we become only aware of these electromagnetic informative fields at the moment we use our mobile telephone or by switching on our radio, television, or laptop. What we receive is neither inside the instrument nor in the components, but thanks to the receiver, the information from the electromagnetic fields becomes observable to our senses, and hence perception occurs in our consciousness. Internet with more than a billion websites can be received at about the same time in the USA, in Europe, and in Australia, and is obviously not located inside our laptop, nor is it produced by it. Now we can conclude that our waking consciousness, or ego, which we experience as our daily consciousness, is only a part of our whole and endless non-local consciousness, which also can be called universal consciousness, or cosmic consciousness, or divine consciousness. This view of non-local consciousness allows us to understand a wide variety of special states of consciousness, such as can be experienced during a critical medical situation, an NDE, during an acute situation of apparently unavoidable death in an imminent traffic accident, a fear-death experience. These experiences are also reported during meditation or deep relaxation, a mystical or religious or enlightened experience, during changing states of consciousness, during regression therapy, hypnosis, hypnagogia, severe depression, isolation, or the use of drugs like LSD or DMT. This experience of enhanced consciousness may also occur during the terminal phase of life, deathbed vision, or end-of-life experiences, or at the moment of death of a close relative, a shared death experience, or a empathetic NDE. The interconnectedness with non-local aspects of consciousness also explains the apparitions at the moment of death, like being in contact with non-local aspects of the consciousness of a dying person at a distance, the so-called perimortal experiences, or in the period following death, the inner feeling of being in contact with aspects of the consciousness of deceased relatives, the so-called post-mortal experience of after-death communication. The interconnectedness with these informative fields of non-local consciousness also explains the enhanced intuition, like clairvoyance, clairaudience, prognostic dreams, and visions, the non-local information exchange. As I told before, following an NDE, most people, often to their own amazement and confusion, may experience such an enhanced intuitive sensibility, which means having access to non-local information that is not received by our senses or by our body. Presumably, the functional receiving capacity of the body is permanently enhanced following an NDE, which can be compared with a radio receiving not only channel one, your own consciousness, your personal consciousness, but also at the same time channel 2, 3, 4, and 5, the fields of consciousness of others. William James has called this a lower personal threshold of consciousness. This remote non-local communication or entanglement seems also to be demonstrated in remote viewing, the non-local perception, and in the effect of consciousness on matter, like a non-local perturbation as in neuroplasticity, where in EEG, fMRI and PET scan studies, functional and structural changes in the brain are demonstrated following changes in consciousness, like in meditation, mindfulness training, or placebo treatment in patients with depression, chronic pain, or Parkinson's disease, which obviously leaves us only one conclusion. It is mind over matter. Since the publication of several prospective studies on NDE in survivors of cardiac arrest with strikingly similar results and conclusions, the phenomenon of NDE can no longer be scientifically ignored. It is an authentic experience that cannot be simply reduced to imagination, fear of death, hallucination, psychosis, the use of drugs, or oxygen deficiency. And people appear to be permanently changed by an NDE during cardiac arrest of only some minutes duration. According to these studies, the current materialistic view of the relationship between the brain and consciousness held by most physicians, philosophers, and psychologists is too restricted for a proper understanding of this phenomenon. By making a scientific case for consciousness as a non-local and this ubiquitous phenomenon, this view can contribute to new ideas about the relationship between consciousness and the brain. Research on NDE and after-death communication as well questions the purely materialistic paradigm in science. So it seems to be important for our scientific ideas about the mind-brain and mind-body relationship, but it is also evident that it is important for our concepts of life and death, because of the almost unavoidable conclusion that at the time of physical death, consciousness will continue to be experienced in another dimension in which all past, present, and future is enclosed. Quote, death is only the end of our physical aspects. I believe now that death, like birth, may be a mere passing from one state of consciousness into another. However, we should acknowledge that research on NDE cannot give us the irrefutable scientific proof for this conclusion, because people with an NDE did not quite die, but they were all very close to death, in the process of dying, and without a functioning brain. And as I have explained, it has indeed been scientifically proven that during NDE, enhanced consciousness was experienced independently of brain function. Quoting from a recent death announcement, all what you have falls into decay, but what you are lives on beyond time and space. So we have a body and we are conscious. Without a body, we still can have conscious experiences. Recently, someone with an NDE wrote me, I can live without my body, but apparently my body cannot live without me. Remarkably, in a recent representative social poll in Europe, about 55% of the population, more than 250 million people, believed in some kind of personal survival. And in the USA, this percentage is even higher. These surprising high figures are in sharp contrast with the opinions of the majority of Western scientists who systematically ignore and ridicule the possibility of personal survival after physical death. But based on scientific research on NDE, one cannot avoid the conclusion that endless consciousness has and always will exist independently of the body. There is no beginning, nor will there be ever an end to our consciousness.